Hello and welcome back to KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch, Taylor Phelps, and Ryan Billups here with you. This is the Friday edition of our show. Earlier this week, we talked about the NBA playoffs, the draft, quite a lot of stuff that's been going on in the sports world. And today, we are very privileged to be joined by Josh Jorgensen, the new assistant athletic director for the A&M Commerce Lions. We're going to talk to him for a little bit, and then we'll go into your favorite section, Rapid Fires, try to knock Josh off guard a little bit. And then we're going to finish off the show with NBA playoffs, of course, and Rangers talk. We haven't done that in a while, so it'll be good to get into that. So first, Josh, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Originally from Nebraska.
Okay.
Have been a transplant down here to the south. Went to grad school over at Northwestern State over there in Natchitoches, Louisiana. From there, I've worked a lot of different sports, a lot of different venues, independent league baseball to several different college settings over there at McNeese. At McNeese State to my last stop was over at Stephen F. Austin in Nacogdoches, so and now here in Commerce.
Yeah. So that's an interesting journey that you've had. What do you think's your favorite job so far?
Oh, wow. Each of them have had their high points. You know, independent league baseball is always fun because you see and do absolutely everything.
Right.
The crazy part about that was we also housed the University of Nebraska, their baseball team. So from pretty much March to April till September, it was baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, that's a lot of baseball.
Yeah. You know?
It is a lot of baseball.
So you made a trip from Nebraska to Louisiana,
yes,
then back to Nebraska.
Back. Yep.
So what brought you to Louisiana in the first place?
Grad school.
Okay.
Yep. I went to a D3 school there in Lincoln, Nebraska, called Nebraska Wesleyan, and then was looking at going into sports and what we needed to do. And at the time, as it is still now, the master's program was really the next step that you need to take. And so our volleyball coach at the time at Wesleyan, he went to school there at Northwestern State and said, "It's a good place. Why don't you go down there?" All right,
I'll go down.
Loaded up everything I had in the truck and went down there.
So where did your interest in sports come from? Where did that develop?
Just growing up. I'm the youngest of three boys, and the oldest brother, he's actually a sportscaster, and he was, from day one, as long as I can ever remember, you know, into the sports scene. My middle brother was probably the best athlete out of us all, but we grew up, and you learn to compete real quick when you're the youngest.
Definitely.
So did you play sports?
Yes, I did. Growing up, played everything. High school was primarily football, and then basketball, and then track. At Wesleyan, I was a track and field athlete. I pole vaulted in college, and just loved doing everything. You know, growing up, I thought I was going to go the basketball route, and then I figured out I really couldn't jump. I was too skinny and too slow. But you know, it was a lot of fun, and it's something that you really wouldn't trade for anything.
So in your professional life, too, I understand you have like a relationship with Ryan Ivey before you came here.
Yes.
Where does that originate from?
Actually, that originated because from McNeese, but because the athletic director at McNeese was an undergrad and in graduate school when I was there at Northwestern State.
Mm-hmm.
So a job opened up at McNeese, and I said, you know, I like being down there in the South, and maybe I should try for it. Well, that connection was made and got that job down there, and Ryan was essentially my supervisor over there because I ran a lot of the game operations and that sort of thing at McNeese. And then went on to bigger and better things at SFA, and then bigger and better things here now.
Awesome.
Can you tell us a little bit about what your responsibilities are going to be?
Sure. With the title of Assistant Athletic Director for External Affairs, essentially that external means anything you may see.
Okay.
When you think about a game, anything, whether it's the signage, it's promotions, it's the marketing and sponsorship, you know, that all goes in there, plus the game operations side.
Right.
It's, you know, you got to, first make sure the game goes off. That's the most important thing.
Right.
Two teams and the referees, you're good to go. And then after that, everything else that we're going to bring to the table and make it a lot better of an event more than just a football game.
Now, to my understanding, is this the are you the first one in this position at our university? This is like a new position kind
yes,
of for us.
This was a new position. I know when Ryan went around and the rest of the athletic staff went around and did a lot of those town hall meetings,
mm-hmm.
one thing they found out that they're really lacking was the marketing side of it and the engagement yes. side of it. So he put it on his docket to really try to get this. And because of our past relationship, he knew that I've done a lot of these things mm-hmm. with my background. It fit, and so far we've been having a lot of fun.
So what drew you to commerce? What interests you the most about this position?
You know, really talking with Ryan, one thing that he kind of pitched was that the opportunity is there, the potential is there. And yes, it's going to take a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication, but we're really able to grow something. And at this point in my career, to be able to do that, to be able to make all those different strides, really gives you an education that you're not going to get at a lot of schools.
Right.
You know, a lot of places you're going to go into, it's all set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. if we are all at A&M, we aren't making many choices.
No. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a system in place.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and things are all set for you. This is the protocol. Go that route.
Right.
Here, we're making a lot of those choices. You know, you've got the freedom to do that, which is huge, huge. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to change some things, obviously keep some things, but really make everything you can possibly do, make it better than what it was,
yeah.
it helps to be able to have that freedom.
Okay. So what do you want to see change if you had a, like in your time here at Commerce, is there one thing that you want to see change more than anything else?
Since I necessarily haven't been here for, you know, a full football season yeah. or anything like that, I can't say that I've seen all of the support. From what I have seen and heard, my biggest thing would be to have, you know, I put a strategic plan together the other day for, you know, at least 3 years out. And my goal in those 3 years is to be averaging, you know, if not more than 5,000 people at a football game.
Yeah.
Last year, we were at 1,500, almost dead last in the league.
Yeah.
If I can make an event that's bringing 5,000 people to every football game, mm-hmm. then A, the football team's probably winning, which is good for everybody.
Yes, definitely.
And B, we're getting a lot of support from a lot of the people in the area.
So community and student support.
So what's kind of a challenge of that? Like you said, supporting people while they're winning, you don't really have much control over the winning part of it. So what's like a challenge that you have to conquer when you're looking
that
route?
It's one of the more difficult things because for the most part, we're all sports fans.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to go to a football game, just watch a football game. We're going to go to baseball, just watch baseball. But one thing I learned, especially at the University of Nebraska, the Huskers were really good at baseball when I was there. Then they kind of got a little worse.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of Husker fans in the crowd, not necessarily baseball fans.
Mm-hmm.
When the team's not that good, you find out who your diehards are.
Yeah.
You know, so what I have to do is look at it from that standpoint and say, we've probably got a lot of people that might not be huge football fans or might not be huge basketball fans. What else can we do to make them want to come? Whether it's a pregame concert, whether it's a kids area, whether it's all new tailgating area, whether, you know, all of these other things that we're going to have to tie in to make it more of an event. You know, and starting just on campus, a lot of kids are going to leave during the weekends.
Yeah.
What can we do to keep those kids here?
Mm-hmm.
If it is more of a production on a Saturday than just, oh, yep, you got a 2-3 hour football game.
Right.
If we can actually bring something to the table that they'll also come in for, then we'll start getting a lot of those students engaged on campus.
So is there anything that y'all have already decided that y'all are going to do to try to keep yeah, students around?
Yeah, definitely the student rewards program is a big one that we'll be rolling out here shortly. Working out the bugs on that. That is one where different events and we're trying to work with different people on campus on this also, but different sporting events obviously will have a point value. If you go to that game, you check in, you either scan your ID, you do different things. For the most part, I'm going to have it so it's all on the smartphones now.
Yeah.
So you can check in on Facebook, you can check in on Twitter, mm-hmm. you can check in on Foursquare, all those different all those different social media types. You can check in, you get points. At the end of each month, maybe we're giving away this prize. At the end of the year, you came to the most games, you had the most points, you're walking home with a brand new 40-inch TV. You're going, you know. So I'm trying to find different sponsors that want to get in on this deal and really make it something that the students will grasp and run with.
Right.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I've got two questions for you. One, what do you think is going to be your the thing you look most forward to? And then two, what do you think is going to be the most challenging part of this next season?
Probably one and the same, and that is getting crowds at the game. You know, I've was in sports for a while, and then I got out of sports and worked in the private sector for a little while. And at the end of the day, I thought, what really drives me? And it's running an event that has a huge crowd and not having any problems.
Yeah.
If you can do that, you've been pretty successful. Whether the team won or not, like you said, I'm not in charge of that. But when you have ran an event and everything went all right. Mm-hmm. So the thing I would be most proud of that I'm most looking forward to is having a crowd out there at the football games. That's also going to be the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
You know, is getting them out there and doing those different things.
So do you target mainly, of course you target students, but what about alumni and like community members just here in the community?
Yeah, pretty much what you're going to start with is think of a dartboard. It's got the bullseye. The bullseye is campus.
Yeah.
You want to hit bullseye. You know, you got to get the students out there. Mm-hmm. Then as you move out, the points, you know, they're right there. You want to get the commerce as the community. You got to get the community coming out. You know, you got to take care of your own house before you go and take care of the neighbor's house. So then after that, then we're going to hit, you know, Greenville, Sulphur Springs, Paris, all those outlying. And obviously an easy one you're going to shoot for is the alumni.
Yeah.
They at least have some tie. You know, Joe down the street, he might just be in town because he grew up here, but he never went to school here. He went to A&M and now he's moved back and that sort of thing. You want to try to get those people on board, but the alumni, they've been on campus.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to get the alumni tied in? Those are things we're working through.
All right. Well, we're going to go on to the next section of the show and hit you up with some rapid fire questions, what we really can learn about you. So here we go. All right, Josh. So first, favorite person to interact with in all of your sports work?
Or favorite person you've met, just a sports personality maybe.
One of my favorite, Rob Childress, head baseball coach at A&M.
Okay.
What is your best childhood memory?
Best childhood memory is actually practicing a basketball move for hours and then actually getting it to work against my older brother.
Okay,
your favorite sport to work with, whether it's football, basketball, whatever?
Probably football, you know, just because the season's short. It's bam, bam, it's high energy, it gets going, and then, you know.
And there's limited games, too.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, or LeBron James?
Michael Jordan.
Okay.
What do you have a weakness for?
Weakness for probably ice cream.
Okay, favorite sporting event to attend?
You know, I've never been to the Super Bowl or anything like that. I've never been to a big NASCAR race. I'm looking forward to that, possibly. What I have been to is the Final Four. That was pretty cool.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool. How about Wayne Gretzky, Bobby Orr, or Alexander Ovechkin?
I'm a Gretzky guy.
You know,
I'm old enough to remember Gretzky.
Okay.
What's your favorite sports movie?
Favorite sports movie? Bull Durham. That's up there.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. What's your favorite sports franchise?
The Cubs. I'm a Cubs fan.
Okay. Biggest inspiration?
Probably my mom.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the craziest thing you've ever done?
Oh, that I can mention on air.
There you go.
Wow, that one's tough.
Yeah, keep it PG.
You know, probably my 3 years in Natchitoches, Louisiana alone.
Okay.
There's so many.
Sums it up.
Yeah. Just that alone.
If you have to pick a baseball player to play with, are you going to pick Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, or Barry Bonds?
Probably Willie Mays.
Willie Mays, okay.
Yeah, just the way he went about the game.
All right. What job would you have pursued if not something in sports?
Possibly Probably being a farmer back home.
Okay.
Grew up on a farm.
Pizza or steak?
Steak.
Would you rather watch the game on TV or be at the stadium?
Be at the stadium.
Would you rather catch a pass from Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, or Joe Montana?
Joe Montana.
Okay.
If there was a movie about your life, who would you like to see play the leading role?
Wow.
Who would fit you well?
Probably Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder, okay.
Would you rather fight Mike Tyson or talk like him forever?
I'd fight him.
Okay.
I would go with that one, too.
I'm not scared.
Would you rather live alone in paradise or with other people in Antarctica?
Other people.
Okay.
Here's our last one. Would you rather lie all the time or tell the truth all the time?
Probably, I should say tell the truth.
I agree. That's the best one to go with.
All right, Josh. Well, that's going to do it for us on this rapid fire section. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back, and you're welcome to stay with us if you want to. This is KETR's Locker Room.
I'm David Erbach, host of Latin Soul. Join me on Tuesday night for a journey through Latin jazz, bossa nova, flamenco, and much more. Latin Soul, Tuesday night at 9, following Natalie Texan on KETR.
From the home of the blues and the birthplace of rock and roll, it's Beale Street Caravan, featuring Memphis music and its derivative forms. Each program presents seasoned veterans alongside up-and-coming artists recorded at festivals and venues throughout the United States, featuring music industry experts and celebrities who liven up each program with inside commentary about the history and the process of the music. Join Pat Mitchell for Beale Street Caravan, Tuesday nights at 11 following Latin Soul on KETR.
Many listeners of KETR are homeowners who take advantage of lawn and garden, housekeeping, maintenance, and other home-related services. Our listeners could be your customers. Introduce your company to them through program underwriting on your station. For more information, contact Sherry at 903-513-9684.
All right, we're back on KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch, Taylor Phelps, and Ryan Phillips. Josh Jorgensen had to leave. He couldn't stay with us for this next segment of the show, but we were very, very glad to have him on the show, and we look forward to having him for more, maybe even weekly line segments.
Yeah,
we really look forward to that. So now we're going to talk a little bit of baseball, but before that, we're going to sum up what's going on in the NBA playoffs right now. So first, I want to start off with the Nets and the Bulls. The Nets and Bulls, the Bulls were up 3-1 at one point in the series, and now it's tied at 3-3.
Going to both a teams game have won 7 3. In Brooklyn.
Yeah.
They actually had to reschedule a Rihanna concert because the Nets didn't realize we'd be going to a game 7, and now they're back at the Barclays Center ready to play. But it's just these playoffs have been much more exciting than I originally had imagined, and we had talked about. We thought the first round was going to be five games, six games, but of course it's been a lot better series than we've seen, and now we have the Nets looking to maybe come back from weren't they down? They were down
3-1. Yeah,
and to be able to come back and take on Chicago, I thought for sure Chicago would have it in five games.
Let's talk about why Chicago suddenly can't beat them anymore. In this last game, Joakim Noah has a hurt foot. He's played the whole series with just one good foot. Kirk Heinrich has sat out the last two games with a bruised calf, and
that's hurt them a lot.
Yeah, he's the one that's shut down Darren Williams.
And we've seen Kirk Heinrich's value now.
Yeah. Lou Aldang has missed Thursday with the flu. He's a very big component to their offense. Nate Robinson played but threw up on the sidelines several times, just threw up into the bleachers. He scored 18 points for them, though. And Taj Gibson also played, only scored 3 points, and he had flu-like symptoms. So the Bulls are kind of under the weather right now. Yeah. They've got lots of injuries.
Let me ask you this, Cooper. Do you think that there's maybe a bug going around in the NBA? I know that James Harden has strep throat right now.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of injuries and sickness.
Yeah, I mean,
this year.
It's a crazy year. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen this many superstars and people get injured and people get sick. You never know who's going to play night to night.
That's true.
And this David Lee came back the other night.
Yeah,
Jeremy Lin's supposed to be back tonight. James Harden's sick. Yeah.
I think David Lee is the biggest shocker. I mean, a torn hip flexor, and he's coming back and playing.
He only played
six.
A minute and 30 seconds, but. I mean, we can talk about that game, too.
We will.
The Golden State almost threw that game away.
Yeah. But let's talk Rockets and Celtics first before we get to the Warriors.
Before we skip over the Heat, I know we initially picked – I'm sorry, not the Heat, the Bulls. I know we initially all picked the Bulls to win it.
Yeah.
Has anybody changed their mind on that?
You know, I gotta put a star to this. I think if the Bulls have everyone back healthy, they would win easily against the Nets.
Okay.
But if they don't – especially if they don't have Kirk Heinrich back and Luol Deng, they lose. I just don't see how the Nets could lose that game.
I'm just going to go with my gut, and my gut tells me that Tom Thibodeau is going to pull it out, and he's not going to be beat after being up 3-1. So I'm going to go Bulls.
I'm going to go Bulls as well, but I honestly do think it could go either way.
It really could. Well, let's move on to the Rockets and Celtics. They were both down 0-3 in their series. No team in 212 teams that have been in that situation has ever come back and won the series. But now both teams are just down one game. It's game six. Both of them happen, I think, tonight, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so, yes.
And, I mean, it's amazing. Now, the Celtics, I think, are the more surprising because the Knicks don't have anyone hurt. They don't have anyone injured except for J.R. Smith, but he's come back.
They've just lost their...
They've lost their mojo.
Yeah, they thought they had the series won.
Yeah.
They could skate through four games real quick, and they really just... I mean, hopefully you'll see them come out with some more energy, and they should be able to take care of the Celtics.
I mean, Russell Westbrook had a lot to do with the Rockets being able to come back.
Right.
The last game was kind of ridiculously blowout. But let me tell you something about Kevin Durant. He hasn't been showing the same tenacity or the same humility that he once showed as a player in the NBA.
Okay.
At one point, he was, give me the ball, let me go. I watched Kevin Durant the other night, down six, stand on the three-point line and let everyone else do what they wanted. He should be demanding the ball, and he should be doing it in the humble manner that he used to do it. A person mentioned to me the other day that he used to point at the sky when he did something, made a basket, but now he's pounding his chest. Just differences like that, that I'm sick of being second, coming out in Sports Illustrated. He used to be this humble, you didn't hear much from him kind of guy, and now he's kind of changed his persona. And whether that has anything to do with his play or the play of the Thunder, it still makes a difference.
Right. Well, let's talk about this. Durant is currently scoring 37.4% of his entire team's points, and only two people since the ABA and NBA merger have scored more of a percentage. Jordan did it twice in 86 and 88. He scored, I think, around 39% of his team's entire scoring.
We could have suspected that.
Yeah. And Dwayne Wade did it in 2010 when the Celtics took the Heat in five games. The Heat only managed to win one game in that series. That was the year before, by the way, that Bosch and James joined him down there. Now, the 88 Bulls advanced, but then they got swept by the... No, they lost 4-1 to the Detroit Pistons. And no other team has even won that series. So what do you think is going to happen? Could the Rockets come back and win this series?
I guess it comes down to... Yes, I think we're also seeing Scott Brooks' failures as a coach, and Kevin McHale is a really good coach in the NBA. But I think they can. I mean, a young ball club playing at home, and then they don't have anything to lose.
Yeah.
Yes, I do think they can. I don't think they will.
Okay.
I think the Thunder probably win this next game.
It's in Oak City, by the way.
Go ahead and end the series.
No, it's in Houston.
This next one.
They go ahead and end the series off. I really do think the Thunder will pull it out. Durant's going to come out motivated. Mm-hmm. The team's going to come out motivated. I think the same thing's going to happen with the Knicks, and the same thing's going to happen with Memphis. They're just going to come out, and they're going to try to end the series.
Is Memphis playing tonight, too?
Memphis playing at home,
I
believe.
And they're up 3-2 in their series.
Right.
So,
okay. Well,
anytime you have the chance to just end the series and the team's right on your heels, they're going to come out more motivated.
Yeah. Well, let's talk just who has the best percentage out of these three teams tonight that are down 2-3. The Rockets, the Celtics, or the Clippers. Which of those three teams do you think could win their series?
I think the Rockets has the best chance of winning. I know that sounds crazy, but with Westbrook being injured, they're kind of losing their flow. Players are being put out of their positions to fill the needs of what Westbrook was doing. I think they're the most in disarray. The other teams have just been losing. But this one has kind of caused some chaos within the organization.
Yeah.
And so I see the Rockets as being the highest possibility.
Yeah, I agree with Taylor as well. You see the injuries with the Clippers. You see, I mean, obviously the Celtics have lost Rondo and I think the Celtics situation is more of...
Of course, the Celtics have been dealing with this for a while.
Right. I think the Celtics issue is more of a... or that series issue is more of a Knicks issue, not a Celtics issue.
Right. Like wearing black at a funeral.
Right,
all
exactly.
That stuff.
So I do. I think Houston has the best chance. I don't really think any of them will do it, though.
Okay. Well, I would say... I'm going to give a percentage. I'm going to say the Rockets have a 60% chance of winning just game six. I don't think they win the series.
That's pretty good odds, though.
I'm going to say the Celtics lose tonight and that the Knicks advance. And I'm going to say that Memphis closes out their series tonight. I don't think there's more than a 30% chance the Clippers beat them. I'd give the Celtics a 40% chance just because Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce are amazing. But I think the Rockets have a 60% chance to extend it one more game and then lose. But I think that's about where it stands. And then let's talk, just finish off this segment real quick about the NBA. We're going to talk a little bit of Rangers after this. But the Warriors advanced four games to two over the Nuggets. Now, when David Lee went out, most of us said, okay, the Nuggets have this.
Definitely.
What do you think changed?
I think they really found what they're better at, and they're better at playing small. Now, David Lee's a great player, but when Jarrett Jack is in there and he's has a primary role. Now, while I watch the game and I'm like, gosh, Jarrett, we just passed Stephen Curry the ball. But he's somebody you have to respect and guard.
Yeah.
And just their whole – Stephen Curry's carrying the whole team.
I was going to say, it's all about Stephen Curry right now.
Stephen Curry from assist to showing up big in the third quarter. Oh, my gosh, you couldn't stop the
just
man.
Just incredible. But they did try to give away the game.
Several times, yeah.
In the end, yeah, and that's just being a young team,
too. Did they have a 15, 20-point lead? And they just – I mean, they couldn't inbound the ball. They throw it right to the other team, give them wide-open layups. They turn the ball over. I mean, they wanted to.
And let's give credit to Denver, too, a very athletic and long team. They bothered Stephen Curry a lot through the first and second quarters of every game, their length, because it was hard. It was really hard to make passes. But, you know, he gets over that. It was much harder. It's much harder for Chris Paul in the Memphis series because of their length, and you kind of see the same challenges.
Right. Yeah. Well, you saw Golden State last night, Denver last night, they would trap Stephen Curry after he got past half point to get it out of his hands. And that was kind of their eventually, Stephen Curry started figuring out how to get around that. But for a while, they forced some turnovers. They were doing some good things, but that series is over.
So since we talk...
And it'll be Golden State and Spurs now.
Yeah. So since we talk Stephen Curry, last thing of NBA, where do we rank Stephen Curry right now on the point guard list in the league?
Okay.
He's at least top eight.
See, it depends on what you're asking, though. Are you asking assists or scoring?
Because most people think of him as a two guard, but he's not. He's a point guard.
Yeah, he plays like a two guard.
So if all-around
point guard.
If you're picking a point guard for your team out of all the point guards in the NBA, including Rondo and Westbrook,
and Derrick
Rose,
where
does he rank? And Derrick Rose.
I'd say that he'd be in the top 10. I don't know if he'd be in the top 5.
I'd say right around 8 or 9.
I think I'd take him about 5. I think he's in the top 5.
Okay.
I think he's underestimated as a player, but the guy can really play.
Yeah,
he's a great scorer, and shooting wise, I'd put him up there top 5.
He's the number
5.
He's
right
definitely
now.
The best shooter in the NBA.
But I think assist wise and what he can do on the court utilizing other players, he's nowhere near Steve Nash or Rajon Rondo or even Tony Parker
or Chris Paul.
But I think if he was playing as a shooting guard.
But I think he'll be there, though, too.
Yeah.
He's a very good young
That's true.
Player.
And he's always improved every year. He's gotten better.
Yes.
Although injuries are still a big thing for him. Real quick, before we move to the Rangers, let's just pick the series. How many games do you think Warriors or Spurs?
Oh, I think Spurs in 5. I think the Spurs have too many weapons.
Right.
There's not a go-to guy or enough weapons on the Nuggets to have beat the Warriors.
Yeah, I agree. Spurs in 5.
I'm going to say Spurs in 6 just because Golden State split the series with the Spurs in the regular season.
Okay.
But we'll see what happens. All right, let's finish off the show very quickly. We don't have much time left with the Rangers. Last time we talked about them, they were doing great on a real long winning streak. Everybody was pitching well. But now the Rangers are 17-11, and they've lost quite a few games. They lost their first series this season to the White Sox, 3-1. Now, what's going on with the Rangers right now? Why do you think they've suddenly had cold bats again and not great pitching? What's happened?
You know, they really have had cold bats all year long. I mean, they've never. I mean, they've had a couple games where they've hit real well, but for the most part, their bats have been pretty quiet compared to last year. It's really been the pitching that's really caused us some problems in the last couple weeks. I mean, you even saw with the win, Yu Darvish's pitch kind of got us finally kind of broke that loose streak for us, but he even gave up 4 or 5 runs.
Yeah.
And so every game you're seeing our guys give it up 4 and 5 runs, and our offense just isn't good enough to produce that on a consistent basis. So really, for our team to be good this year, our pitchers need to keep them under 3 runs.
Yeah.
Last time we talked about it, Cooper, we were so high up on the Rangers, but we also mentioned that, you know, baseball's a long season, and there's going to be ups and downs, and hopefully this is a slump that we recover from quickly. But you never know. This could be this. Maybe we were hot at the beginning and we're not as good as we thought we were.
Which really kind of funny, because one of our best pitchers right now is Nick Teppish, and he's our rookie pitcher we brought up just because of some injuries. So
yeah.
He might be a guy we see stick around even with the return of some of our injured pitchers.
That'd be great to see. Now, the Rangers tonight face the Boston Red Sox. They're starting a series with them.
Napoli.
Yeah. They're the best team in baseball right now. They also got another player, a pitcher from us, was Dempster.
Oh, that's
Dempster
right,
signed
yeah.
with them. But they're the best team in baseball right now. They're not a half game ahead of the Yankees. They're 2 games ahead of the Yankees, who are a half game ahead of the Rangers for second place. And then the Rangers are third place in the AL right now, with Kansas City just a half game behind them. Now, of those 4 teams, first through four, which one do you think is the biggest surprise?
Of who again?
It's Boston Sox first, Yankees second, Rangers third, and Kansas City's fourth.
Oh, I think Boston's by far the biggest surprise. Just look at their division, and then, you know, they're a team that really no one gave a chance coming.
They haven't had a lot of success the last few years, and I follow Boston closely because I'm somewhat of a fan.
But, again, back to what Taylor said, it is a really long season, anything could happen. It could turn around real quickly on them in a negative fashion.
I mean, they've only played 28 games.
That's true.
So you never know what the change will be.
Right. Well, we've got Holland pitching tonight. He's 1-2. And then I think the next pitcher will be Teppish or – no.
Justin.
It'll be Teppish and then Justin Grimm.
And Justin Grimm has been another surprise this year.
He's been good.
He won American League Rookie of the Month last month. So he beat out Nick Teppish last month. So
yeah.
They've both been great. Grimm has had a couple rocky starts, but yeah. For the most part, man, I've been very impressed with our two.
Derek Holland's got to step it up at 1-2, and this is a huge game for the Rangers, like you said, and being in a slump.
Yeah, Holland and Ogando have both kind of. Hurt us this year.
I think Holland, even though he's not won games, he's pitched very well in those games.
He started off pitching well. He's kind of hit some rocky.
Yeah, he's
rocky
hit a little bit of rocky, but
during this loose streak,
right? But. Even his rocky starts.
He's been unlucky, too.
Yeah, the Rangers aren't hitting anything in his starts.
Yes.
So it's hard for you to win. We saw that with Matt Harrison just a few years ago. He always got the games where the Rangers didn't score any runs, and so he had a lot of losses, even though he was pitching, you know, like just below the replacement level. So we'll see what happens. But I think the Rangers really need to turn it around in this series. All right. That's about going to do it for us this week. We're going to be back next Tuesday at 2. You can turn in, and we will have quite a lot to talk about, I'm sure. A lot of second-round series in the NBA will start, and we'll talk more Rangers baseball, maybe get you an update on what's happening with Danny Mason and whether he'll get signed by an NFL team. All right, I'm Cooper Welch.
I'm Taylor Phelps.
Ryan Billups.
This is KETR's Locker Room.